Hi, I'm Taylor Smurl.
And I'm Liz June.
And this is Neat. Weekly Boozecast.
It's a history lesson with a twist.
Hey-o.
Hey. We've got another Patreon question this week.
Nice.
Yeah, this one comes from Emily. And Emily says, hey, y'all, your podcast is awesome. Aw,
thanks.
I'm not sure if there'd be a ton of info on it, but I'd love to hear maybe some history on ciders or the evolution of happy hours. If you have a preference of ciders, what's your favorite? I'd be interested to know, because sometimes a cider at Friday happy hour is what gets me through the week.
Now, I definitely want to come back to the happy hour part of this question, because I think that could be an episode in itself, but we are going to cover the cider part of your question today.
Because as it turns out, there is a bunch of history on ciders. Mm. Yeah, so thank you so much, Emily, for your question. Oh, do you want to share your favorite cider?
There are a couple ciders that I really enjoy. I really like the Austin line of ciders, Austin East.
Actually, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah. Yeah, the Ruby Red is my favorite. They have a lot of fun flavors. I like Wolfer.
Yeah.
Wolfer cider is really good. It's really nice and dry.
Super fancy.
Yeah, it is. It's a little expensive. Another one that I really like, it's a little newer on the market, is Ninepin.
Oh, I've heard of that.
Yeah, they've got a really cool line of ciders, also some seasonal ones. They also have a really nice rosé cider. They have an Earl Grey cider pretty fun.
That sounds cool.
Yeah, but there's also a Brooklyn cider house in my neighborhood that they distribute locally. I don't know how far that gets outside of Brooklyn, but it's really good stuff too.
So okay.
If you're ever in Bushwick, I recommend hitting up that cidery and drinking all their cider.
We should have a cidery taste. Yeah. Tasting. Cool. Well, so I'm going to start with the beginnings of cider, and turns out it's old.
Yep.
It's super old. So we have records of it as far back as 1300 BCE in Egypt, because Egypt kept really good records. So Ramses had, there were records of Ramses expanding his apple orchards. Then, like, following that, Caesar found the Celtic Britons fermenting cider made from their native crab apples. There's also sidra, which is the national drink of Spain, which is made from fermenting apples, which is well known and recorded before the Common Era. So that's also super old. Maybe it's mentioned in the Old Testament. There's a Hebrew word, shikar, and we know that that's definitely the root of the word cider, although it could refer to some kind of ancient beer, but what we do know is that it is loosely translated to mean strong drink. So really that could mean a lot of things, but let's just get into the etymology of that. I said etymology weird. Get into the etymology of that.
Fine.
Okay, so shikar, when translated from Hebrew to Greek to Latin, ends up being sicara, and then when it was translated into Old French, it's cistre, and then finally cidre. When the French took over England in the 1100s, the word becomes cider. So as we may have already deduced from that info, the people who lived in that region were really already making it. Like, remember, Caesar found them making it. But it really just goes to show that everyone was doing it. Like,
everyone
was doing it. Everyone who had apples was making cider. And that's because, cider was created by accident, we think. We don't have great records on it, but we know that up until pretty recent history, like the last few centuries, the only apples that were available were crab apples. And as we know, as we discussed a little bit in the Johnny Appleseed episode, crab apples are not good to put in your mouth for eating.
Nope. Hey, you're a little crabby. Yeah, I'm not going to taste good for you. I'm a crab apple.
Yeah, so instead of eating them, they pressed the fruit into juice. So at some point, we can assume that somebody left the juice sitting out for too long, but we super liked the effect that it had when we drank it. So because apples grew mostly in the cooler climates, like Europe and Britain, where civilization was slow to develop record keeping, as opposed to like the Egyptian and Greek and Roman societies, we don't really know the details of the when and how, and the specific methods of making cider weren't like standardized until much later when it was produced commercially. We know that it happened way before the Common Era. It was probably by accident, and it probably was popular because it was safe to drink. So like the reason why we drank beer was because it's a drinkable liquid,
right,
compared to the nasty water supply, which could give you like typhoid or cholera or dysentery. Not only was it safer to drink than water, but people kind of recommended it, as many other alcoholic drinks back then, as like a health benefit.
Sure.
So it was recommended to help digestion, prevent rheumatism, gout, bladder stones, colic, laryngitis, and fevers.
I'm really glad I live in the time period I live in, but there is that little bit of being alive during the time when you go to a doctor and they'd be like, I don't know, drink some whiskey, have some cider, that'll help you.
Good for you.
Thanks, doc.
Great. So it became a staple in English and later American society. In the 1500s, cider was often used as currency to pay rent or tithes. Tithes are like...
That's money to the church, right?
Yeah.
That would be cool if that worked today.
You'd be like, I don't have any money, but I made this boozy apple juice for you.
Can I just pay with all the random cocktail syrups and ingredients I have in my house? Like, here we go.
That's the downside of capitalism, is you got to turn it into money first. So the English were really jazzed about it. They loved it so much. So they brought...
You can't see, but Liz just said jazz hands.
Because I couldn't think of the word that I was trying to think of, so I had to do the action. And then I remembered that's...
Cider.
So the English settlers brought apple seeds and swarms of bees to the New World.
Bees.
Yeah, they brought bees because you need the bees.
You do need the bees.
You need the bees to pollinate the apples, and I guess they weren't sure if we had bees in this continent. I'm not sure. I mean, I assume there must have been bees.
Well, I don't know.
Or something. Well,
I just like that idea of look, we're going to a new land. Pack your bees.
Get your bees.
That might not be bees.
We don't know. We haven't checked. We don't know if there's bees.
It's like there's Johnny Appleseed and then there's just like Hank bees. Spreading bees all around the world.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, you gotta come prepared. And we needed to prepare because everybody in the quote-unquote New World was crazy about cider. So the Founding Fathers had orchards, actually. John Adams started his day with a tankard of cider, and he lived to be 91. So people took that as an example to prove that cider had health benefits.
I really hope I live to be like a crazy old age, just so all of my bullshit habits people will hold up as possibly healthy. Like, you know, there's always that old lady that's like, I ate steak every day and I lived to be 102.
Yeah. You can justify your whole life if you live a long time.
I lived off hummus and mezcal. Look at me.
That's not a bad diet, I'd say. Okay, so great. I've got more cider things to tell you.
Okay.
So Ethan Allen, do you remember Ethan Allen? He was a Revolutionary War character.
All right.
And a real person, not just a character. Sorry.
Okay.
I didn't mean to demean his being a human.
I don't think he'd take it personally. He's dead, for sure.
He is super dead. He liked to make a drink of half cider, half rum. And this drink was named the Stonewall. Because the effect of drinking it was like running into one.
I could believe that. There's some measurements.
Yeah, especially because the cider that they were making back then, I would wager, was a lot stronger than the cider we drink today.
Hmm.
So Ethan Allen liked to drink this Stonewall drink, and that was rumored to be the cause, or at least partly responsible, for the Green Mountain Boys taking capture of Fort Ticonderoga in the Revolutionary War.
Wow.
So they were all drunk, and they got super liquid courage and did some battle.
That's a lot of war history, actually, in, I don't know, pre-21st century. Woo, everybody was drunk, yeah. And then they did something.
Oh, my God. That's more or less the history. I mean, I could go on and on, but basically, people were making it everywhere, because anytime we have a crop in abundance, we're like, I don't know, I guess we'll make it into booze. So that's just history. Yep. But so I'll go a little bit into the process of making apple cider. So first you gotta press it. Basically, after you gather the apples, they're scratted, which is a fun word to mean that they're just ground down.
Okay.
Into a pomace or a pomage. And traditionally this is done using like pressing stones with circular troughs or by a cider mill, which would have been driven by hand or a water mill or horsepower, but now we have electricity, so we don't do that anymore. I don't know, maybe Amish people are making it like that. They're definitely not listening to this podcast, so I don't have to worry about offending them too much.
Well,
okay, we'll cut that out. So then you transfer it to a cider press and you build the pulp up in layers known as cheeses until you get a block.
Cheeses?
Yeah.
Good old cider cheese.
Cider cheese. We got moon cheese and cider cheese.
Oh no.
And then the traditional method for squeezing the juice involves placing either sweet straw or hair cloths between the layers of the pomace, and then you alternate it with slatted ashwood racks until there's a pile of 10 or 12 layers, and then that's set. Is then subjugated to increasing degrees of pressure until all of the must or juice is squeezed from the pomace, and then you separate the pulp, and then you put it in either into an open vat or a closed cask, which either one, just something that allows some oxygen into it, because now we're going to get into the fermentation. I'm not a chemist, so I'm not going to go too much into that, but I wanted to talk a little bit of the fermentation, because although it is pretty similar to the way that wine is fermented, it's a little bit unique for cider because there's something called the Crabtree effect. There's two parts of the fermentation process, and that's like the first part is when the yeast are using all their energy to multiply, like to produce more yeast. And during that time, that's like the first like 70% of fermentation, but they're not making any alcohol during that because they're spending all their energy multiplying. And then the second part, like the last 30%, is you typically like you lower the oxygen exposure to encourage them to stop reproducing and focus on creating alcohol. But the Crabtree effect, and we know that we're using mainly crab apples in this process, so that would apply here. Those yeasts produce ethanol even when they're in the first stage of fermentation. So normally they would only produce biomass and carbon dioxide, they're actually producing alcohol in the first part as well. Basically the juice becomes alcoholic in the first stage. So it's common for ciders to be fermented to dryness. So that means you just like let the yeast eat all the nutrients until there's nothing left for them to ferment. So they get to like what's called stuck fermentation. You don't have to do that, but you can in cider because...
I think the term dryness comes up a lot in talking about alcohol, and that's a good moment to kind of just cleanly clarify that. The yeast eats sugar, so when we talk about something being dry, the yeast has eaten the sugar, all the sugar. So you don't taste the sugar, you don't get residual sugar. Residual sugar is the sugar that's left in something that has that still remains.
Okay, cool.
Or is added, but
right.
Yeah.
And you can add sugar and other, like an additional yeast back in, or even before, like you can add, some cider makers add additional fruits or additional yeast before the fermentation. But yeah, like the next fun thing that happens, I'm just going to skip to the next fun thing. So at the end of the process, like the vats are completely filled to exclude the air and any airborne bacteria because you don't want that stuff in there. The fermenting of the remaining available sugar generates a small amount of carbon dioxide that forms to make like a protective layer, and that actually creates a small amount of carbonation. So if you have like a sparkling cider, that's how that happens. Yeah. And it happens naturally. And then the cider's ready to drink after a 3-month fermentation period, but it could be up to 3 years. Just depends upon how you want that cider to taste.
Nice.
Yeah. So it kind of, it had a downfall, of course, like many, many of our spirits. First, even before Prohibition, beer was cheaper to produce than cider, and German immigrants made it popular because they brought their beer making techniques over. And then during Prohibition, they burned the orchards.
Yeah. Oh, Prohibition.
Oh, yeah. You know, and then it comes back, much like the craft beer and micro distilling movement, pretty like in pretty recent history. That's like the 90s.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And then, like, you know, like it's gluten free, so that makes it more popular. Modern cider is made more from culinary apples, which are like the ones that you would eat. And it's lower in tannins and higher in acidity. But you can make it with a variety of apples to produce different flavors, much like the concept of like the English crab apple makes like a drier, higher alcohol content versus like the sweeter French apples produce a sweeter, lower alcohol cider. You can get varieties like that. But we also make heritage cider, which is really still not that much like the OG cider, but it's like, it's made with a combination of culinary apples and traditional cider apples, so it's a little bit higher in tannins.
So there's like a bigger expanse of individual expressions in cider, like beer.
Yeah, exactly, cool. Exactly. But before, like, we only had the one variety of apples, so
this
like...
This is the cider.
That's it, just like the variations you get are from the processing, but yeah.
Cool.
So that is a brief history of cider.
There's a lot there.
Yeah, there's a lot there. There's a couple centuries there. Probably could go even further. There's so much.
Yeah. Well, so when we were talking about cider, it reminded me of something that confused me in my youthful travels. Mm-hmm. In the early 2000s, I went abroad for the first time. I spent some time in Dublin. And I drank a lot of cider there. The cider that you generally found was a cider called Bulmers. Now, I recognize the label of it, the design of it, but the name was not something I was familiar with.
Right.
So back in the States, I'd seen it as something called Magners.
And I'm familiar with Magners. I've seen it.
A lot of you probably are familiar with, you've probably seen Magners Irish cider at your grocery store. Pretty standard cider to find. And maybe if you've been to Ireland, you've also had a pint of Bulmers. Now, maybe also if you've been in the UK, you've also had a pint of Bulmers, but it's Bulmers English cider.
Oh.
This is confusing.
I'm already confused.
I present to you a tale of two ciders.
Oh, no. Oh, God.
So basically, there's a bit of confusing history between the name Magners and the name Bulmers. But it's kind of cool, and I'm going to try to lay it out for you.
Okay, please do.
Okay, so it starts in 1867 with the birth of Henry Percival Bulmer in Hereford, England. He was the son of a local rector, which is just a term for someone that runs a parish in a church. Percy, as he preferred to be called, he had severe asthma and he couldn't regularly go to school.
Aww.
Yeah, so his lack of education and his regular illness kind of made it hard for him to find work. So he just decided, I'm going to go into business for myself, which I think is awesome.
Hey.
Yeah. And his mom gave him this super smart advice that he should go into food and beverage because they never go out of style.
We're still eating and drinking, yep. Even today.
This is good advice. I agree with that advice. He had an older brother named Fred. They'd already dabbled in cider making. The rectory that his father worked at had a small cider press. So, you know, he decided it wasn't very popular. Cider wasn't very well known, ever popular. But, like, you know, everybody drank it, but it wasn't, like, wildly produced.
Okay.
So he used his father's rectory to produce, like, 40 casks of cider and launched a business.
Okay.
So his brother actually left college and, like, he abandoned his own career plans to help him with his business. Fun fact, Fred was offered the position to be the tutor to the children of the King of Siam.
Wow. Yeah. So it wouldn't have been Anna and the King, or it would have been Fred and the
Fred
King?
Fred and the King, I guess. Maybe the same tutor, maybe the same position.
It feels like it's like right for the time period.
Right? I guess so, but...
I mean, I'm glad that because he turned down the position a woman could take over.
I guess, yeah, but you know, and then he could focus on making some cider, which we still enjoy today. So good for all people involved. but yeah, so these two brothers, they started out like a small cider business. Like when they first started, it was all handmade. They couldn't afford anything with any sort of like steam powered machinery. Like it was all just pressed by hand. Very labor intensive. Now, I will say to expand their business as it started to catch on, they did get a loan of about 1,700 euro.
Hey!
Well, which by today's standards is something like $200,000.
That's no small change.
Oh, this is from their father.
That is not a
yeah.
small business loan.
So this is, you know, like, this sounds like a really much like picking themselves up by their bootstraps kind of story, but then their dad gave them a bunch of money.
Oh, yeah.
So that's, you know, kind of at the heart of a lot of these entrepreneurial stories. But they used that money to buy, like, an additional 8 acres. They expanded. One cool thing that they really realized was that the reason cider wasn't more mass marketable was because there wasn't a lot of education around it. Like, okay. You know. So they, like, made booklets about cider, like educational booklets, but also like advertising booklets, and sent them to anyone. Like throughout
what was in these pamphlets?
Just how like, delicious cider was. That it was good for you.
Maybe
that it
you
was...
didn't know that cider is delicious.
Yeah. So they started like a grassroots advertising campaign for their product, and educating people on what it was, which is actually pretty cool. Like I think that's a good. You know,
okay.
they were cider's first PR dudes, and it worked. Over the next 20 years, they expanded their business, and they were very into like learning how to make a better cider, a more consistent cider. Like, they traveled to France to learn advanced cider making techniques. They invested in a lot of new technology. Fred just happened to have been college friends with Dr. Herbert Durnham, who isolated wild yeast to make the first like mass-produced stable
Ooh,
fermentation.
Wild yeasts.
Yeah, so he actually managed to
How
isolate
do you
a
find
strain.
Those?
Well, he isolated a strain. From,
okay.
Yeah. From ambient
you just go
nature.
Out into the bush
and he hunted wild
yeasty,
yeast. Yes.
My yeasty friends.
He isolated some yeast that then they could use because you know it was like with open vat fermentation and early fermentation where we didn't quite get the science. Things could go wrong very easily.
Oh, yeah.
But by this, they knew exactly the kind of cider they'd get every time.
Okay.
So
you could make it consistent.
Yeah. And they were even granted a royal warrant to make cider for the Queen
Ooh,
in 1911.
Fancy.
Which still
fancy.
Continues to the day. Yeah. Now, unfortunately, in 1919, Perry passed away. Fred took the helm. But by 1920, they had 200 employees. They had a booming business. And I do want to say Fred continues to be a pretty cool dude throughout the next like couple decades. He invested a ton of money into building housing for his workers.
Hey.
Yeah. He became a local magistrate and fought for better conditions for women, for their rights, for the health of the poor.
This is so different from a lot of the stories that we tell.
Yeah, usually you look back on any old dude in the alcohol industry and it's like, oh no.
What do you call someone who's fiercely not problematic?
I think that's a good term for
fiercely
it.
Fiercely not problematic.
Yes. He developed, before it was at all standard, I mean, we're talking about like, when we, like industrial time, like England, this is a really scary time to be a worker.
Oh yeah,
and he developed.
They didn't have any rights.
Oh no, it was
they were
like
getting their hands chopped off.
Yeah,
and stuff.
It was a freak. It was a nightmare.
Right.
But he was an outlier. He developed pension plans for his workers. He gave them sick days and holidays. Yeah. So Fred was a pretty cool dude. Now around this time, while the H.P. Bulmer is what they became known as, around the same time as they're expanding. They're, you know, creating this, their giant cider business. We're going to go over to Ireland around 1935.
Okay.
There's a guy named William Magner from County Tipperary who bought an orchard and just started making cider. Meant it to be a local business.
Cool.
But his cider became really popular. And he really couldn't handle his business. It kind of outgrew him. So by this time, H.P. Bulmer had gotten into the business of buying cideries, like, all over the place to help expand their business. And basically these cideries would produce Bulmer's cider, as they were calling it, you know, just to help expand their market. There are a lot of ciders that we now have that were acquired during this time period. Like, Scrumpy Jack Cider, which is still in the market now. This is one of the ones that fell under the Bulmers umbrella around this time period.
So do they, like, when they acquire a cidery, they make them make their cider?
Well, cider was all kind of, I mean, it was made in similar ways at this time. So they would, you know, sort of let them sell the Bulmers brand.
Okay.
And they would be making Bulmer cider, but not that it was that wildly different from what they were making at this time.
Okay.
So first they invested in Magners, and then ultimately they bought the company. And the cider was rebranded as Bulmers throughout Ireland. Magners withdrew his partnership, but he maintained some rights to call his cider Bulmers in Ireland. So basically everything that was being produced by Magners Distillery is called Bulmers. Bulmers is also producing in, like, all around the UK.
Okay.
Popular cider. Now, all is going smoothly until the 1960s.
What happened?
So basically H.P. Bulmers brewed a champagne perry, which is, it's very similar to cider. It's just made with pears.
Okay.
And it was very similar and in direct competition to another product called Baby Chams, which is produced by a company known as Showerings. Now, Showerings' parent company, Guinness and Allied Breweries.
So oh.
Guinness has a hand in this.
I know them.
They took H.P. Bulmer to court, and Bulmer lost. So he lost, as part of the settlement, he was forced to sell its Irish operation to Showerings' parent company.
Oh.
Now, H.P. Bulmer maintained the rights to call their product Bulmers internationally, but not in Ireland. So post, like, 1964 is when everything is settled. The cider brewed in the Irish brewery, forfeited in the court case, could be called Bulmers still in Ireland. But as the brand continued to grow in popularity, it needed a way to be sold internationally.
Okay. I'm going to wait to ask my questions till the end because I'm a little bit confused still. But I think you know what you're doing.
So after this court case, after the dust settles, the basic situation is, in Ireland, a pint of Bulmers was an Irish product. Outside of Ireland, it was a cider produced by H.P. Bulmer in England. So two different labels, two different breweries, two different ciders, same name.
Okay.
Now we get to 1999. Bulmers in Ireland was so popular that they wanted to get their cider on the international market. And they basically decided, we just have to name it something else. Like, we can sell it, we just have to call it something else.
Yeah.
So they go back to the original founder of their brewery, Magner.
Uh-huh.
And name it after him. So Magner's long gone. This is just in name of him. So now you've got Magner's cider, which is Magner's Irish cider, and Bulmer's Irish cider. Same brew, same brewery, same label, but two different names depending on if you're inside or outside of Ireland.
Oh.
And then you've got Bulmer's English cider, which can still be found widely in the UK market.
So does that mean... No, never mind. I'm just going to let you keep going.
It's a little confusing. But, you know, Magners is a staple on the international market. Bulmers still exists in the UK, but it's almost gotten to the point now where, like, Magners / Bulmers has having a weird sort of brand identity crisis because so many people know Magners. Like, Magners is on, like, it's an official team sponsor. Like, it's a big deal around the world, but if you happen to be in Ireland, it looks the same. You just, it's called Bulmers. So they still keep those names separate, but if they really need to anymore, like, is questionable.
Because it's just a legality right now.
Yeah.
Okay.
And if this isn't confusing enough, there are other English ciders that we all know that are made by Bulmers. H.P. Bulmers.
Okay.
English Bulmers. So, like, Strongbow.
Oh, no.
Woodpecker.
Oh, God.
Scrumpy Jack, as I mentioned earlier. Some of these were, like I said, the acquisitions made in the early 1900s. But H.P. Bulmer makes, like, I think 65% of the cider, like, has a hand in 65% of the cider made or sold around the world.
So they're doing okay.
Yeah. And obviously, I don't think, like, we've all seen the Irish Magners in the grocery store. We don't see the H.P. Bulmer's cider in the store.
Right.
It's a bit more of a UK specific thing.
Okay.
Yeah, so as of now, there's still two ciders, same name situation going on. But if you've seen, like, the green and red label with the little three, like, little towers on them.
The one that looks like Magner's label?
Yes. It's the same label. That is the Irish one.
Okay.
And then the Bulmer's English cider is a yellow label. So it's very different.
Okay. You know. Do they taste different? I wonder.
They're pretty similar. They're both like off dry, like ciders.
They're like essentially the same kind of product.
Yeah, and you're not getting the same, you are getting the exact same product in the Irish Bulmers versus the Irish Magners.
Okay.
It's a different product in the English Bulmers and anything else. So if you've ever been confused by this cider conundrum,
you're not alone.
Yeah. So I don't know. Go try it yourself. If you're in the UK or if you're listening to this and you probably have a bit more like firsthand experience with this confusion. But yeah. So there's some cider history and some weird stories.
Yeah, if you are gifted in drawing, like, graphic aids, then, you know, if you want to make us a chart, I'm a visual person myself, so.
I think I made it clear.
You did. It's just me. It's hard for me to learn. Okay, so. Yeah, so that was some fun stuff about cider. Thank you so much for sending in that question, Emily. And thank you to all of our Patreon contributors. Thanks for everybody new who just joined our Patreon. We use that money to pay for the supplies we need to make these delicious cocktails for you and improve our equipment, improve our quality. And if you want to be one of our Patreon supporters, we are going to put the link in our show notes. If you do decide to support us, we are asking our supporters on Patreon to send us a booze-related question that we will answer on the podcast sometime. If there's enough info, we might make an episode like this. Or if it ties into something else we're talking about, we might answer it then. But we will answer it eventually, for sure. In addition to that, we're going to be adding exclusive content and rewards to our Patreon very, very soon, so look out for that. Thank you to everyone who tweeted about the show. It really, really helps us get the word out, especially because we're on iTunes now. So if you're on iTunes, please subscribe, give us a review if you like. Our friends who tweeted about the show this week is Austin Wills, Kat, Mary Smurl, Allison, Clara, and The Ladies of Strange, which is a podcast about weird stuff like true crime, aliens, paranormal, and conspiracies. Cool. So that's pretty cool. Thanks for the shout out. Anyone we missed, thank you so much. Find us on Twitter and Instagram at NeedTheBoozeCast. Thank you to Absurdist for our wonderful theme music.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
All right, so I have been Taylor Smurl.
And I've been Liz June.
And you've been listening to
Neat.